How's everybody? Good. Wonderful. I'm doing great too. Thank you. Cool. Let me think. Any housekeeping things? I don't think so. Meeting next week, so again, I just wanted to make sure. We won't be meeting off and on, but I'll let you know the week before. So anyway, but we'll meet next week. Please come back, and we'll do more. This is what I want to do. Have a word of prayer. Talk about Gideon. And then go out and do something important. How does that sound? Good. The Lord be with you. Let us pray. Blessed Lord, who has caused all scriptures to be written for our instruction, teach us so to hear them, to read, mark, learn, and inwardly digest them, so that we may embrace and ever hold fast the blessed hope of everlasting life that you have given to us through our Lord Jesus Christ, to whom with you and the Holy Spirit be all honor and glory, world without end.
Amen. Amen.
Beautiful.
For those of you who have been, how many people, just a curiosity question, how many people have been coming somewhat consistently so far this? Okay, cool, because there's going to be a pop quiz in a little bit. I'll expect an answer. Beautiful. What we're doing this sort of this season, this fall, is that we're looking through the book of Judges. I didn't do this last week, so I have to double up. I've actually written a book on the Book of Judges. And actually, it's compared with my other... there's even a picture of me when I was young and pretty. As opposed to my other books, this one's actually affordable. So if you don't want to come, you can just read this, because I'm not doing anything different than what I'm doing here. So anyway, there's that. And don't worry, if you weren't paying attention, I'll mention this again. So, for those of you who have been coming, or those of you who haven't, you can see on the handout that there's an outline on the very front. And the reason why there's an outline, I haven't been doing this consistently for the past 5 years, but the reason why there's an outline of the book of Judges is because it's kind of important that you sort of see how the book of Judges as a whole is organized, so that as we work our way through, you can sort of see where on the... downward spiral we happen to be, right? It has two introductions, it has two conclusions, and in the middle, we have a series of judge stories that are, in my head, kind of like Gilligan's Island, right? And that is the judge stories sort of always begin the same place. Some complication happens, some climax happens, and then it resolves, and then we go back to the beginning. So it's kind of a cycle that way. So far, so good. It's just like an episode of comedy or Law and Order or something. It always starts the same place, and it always ends the same place. And something happens in the middle. So far, so good. That's kind of how the Judge stories are organized. The thing is that when you take a look at the Book of Judges as a whole, it is my contention. And again, this is why you pay your... Well, you're not paying tuition, so never mind. This is what I always say in class. This is why you pay your tuition. If you ask me... when you take a look at the book of Judges as a whole, it's actually a tragedy. And that is, it starts off in a pretty good place, and it winds up in a really bad place. And the reason why we read tragedies, is because what they do for us is that they actually provide us a cautionary tale. And that is, I don't think there's anybody in this room that wants to wind up where the book of Judges winds up. And so what we can do with the book of Judges is that we can actually pay attention to what's happening throughout the book of Judges, and maybe not make the same mistakes, right? Not do the same types of things. Because as these cycles, these judge cycles go, in fact, it's not really a cycle, it's more like a spiral. That's where we're going to wind up, I'll just warn you. And so far, we've had the two introductions. We talked about Othniel, dreamy Othniel. He's so wonderful. I love Othniel so much because everything is nice and tight and compact. There's not, in a sense, there's not even a single word in the story of Othniel that's not important. It's just, it's all there. There's a problem. God calls him. He solves the problem. And there's peace. Bam! Then there's Eichlet. Same exact thing. Problem. God calls Eichlet. He solves the problem. We get the funny little story about Eglon. Eglon, right? There's peace. Last week, we dealt with Deborah and Barak and Jael, right? And if you notice, right, what we're starting to have is that things are getting more and more complicated. Because if you remember what happened last week, is that I might actually, yeah, I mean, Deborah's a judge, but she doesn't really do anything to bring the deliverance except to kick Barak in the butt to actually get up and start doing something. And actually, when Barak finally, after two or three tries, finally gets off his chair and does something about it, it's actually not he that actually brings the deliverance at the end, right? It's some foreign woman, right, Jael, that actually brings the real deliverance by killing the Sisera, the general, right? As you can tell, as we go through this cycle, or these cycles, things are getting more and more complicated, more and more un-Othniel-like. Today, we're dealing with Gideon. And you can see, we just wasted a lot of trees, because the Gideon story is 6 pages long, well, 5.5. It's a long story. Do you know the reason why it's so long? Because he doesn't want to do a damn thing. And we'll see this over and over and over, and that is, he's a scaredy cat. He's fearful. He's a wimp. Something that we'll start noticing, and that is, not only do the stories start getting more and more complex, how shall I say this? The quality of the leadership becomes less and less quality. And you can sort of see where the trajectory is going with our final judges. But here we are with Gideon. This is what I want you to do. If you have it there, I want you to look at this. So at the bottom where it says, the story of Gideon, take a look at these sentences. We're going to jump. Okay, here we go. So the Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, right? For those of you who have been coming, right? There's sin. God sells them to the hand of an oppressor. They cry out. God raises up a judge, a deliverer who delivers them. And there's peace. And then after the judge dies, they sin again. God sells them in the hand of an oppressor. They cry out. God raises up a deliverer who delivers them. And there's peace, right? And this is the cycle that's been going on throughout. So far, so good? Good. Just notice this. So at the very bottom, the Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Next sentence. So the Lord gave them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. Turn the page. The Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. Turn the page. You see, time for deliverance or not. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and crossing the Jordan, they encamped in the valley of Jezreel. But the Spirit of the Lord took possession of Gideon. Turn the page. Turn the page. Turn the page. The last page. Right there near the end. So Midian was subdued before the Israelites, and they lifted up their heads no more, and so the land had rest for 40 years in the days of Gideon. You notice how the pattern is still there. There's just all this other stuff that's been shoved into it. If all we did was take out all that other stuff, it's Othniel again. But there's a lot of other stuff. And all that other stuff is mostly because Gideon doesn't want to do anything. A lot of the other stuff is just time-wasting material. It's funny stuff sometimes. It's hilarious stuff sometimes. But it's mostly just time-wasting, which is important. So let's take a look at this. Let's see if we can get a handle on Gideon's character. Not just a literary character, but I mean his character, you know, his character inside. So let's see what we got here. And again, we're not going to be able to read through this whole thing because there's just a lot of wasted material. But the nice thing is that it's wasted material, so we can actually jump over some of it. Sound good? Cool. So here we go. The story of Gideon. The Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord gave them the hand of Midian for 7 years. And just notice, again, those of you who've been going through, just notice what happens here. This is the first time we've actually seen this. And that is what normally has happened. The Israelites did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Normally it says by worshiping the Baals and the Asherah, other foreign deities, right? And so God sells them the hand of the country for so many years. And they cried out. So far, so good? This is the way in which the pattern has worked so far. Notice what happens here. In that suddenly, this oppression part gets expanded. We actually start talking a lot about the oppression. So the Lord gave them to the hand of Midian 7 years. And the hand of Midian prevailed over Israel. Because of Midian, the Israelites provided for themselves hiding places, hiding holes, right, in the mountains, in the caves, in the strongholds. Whenever the Israelites put in seed, the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east would come up against them. And just notice it's not just Midianites. Now we're starting to multiply the oppressors that are coming out, right? So it's not just the Midianites, it's all the Amalekites, and in fact, it's all the people of the east. They would come up against them, and they would encamp against them and destroy the produce of the land as far as the neighborhood of Gaza and leave no sustenance in Israel, no sheep, no ox, no donkey. And so because they and their livestock would come up, and they would even bring in their tents as thick as locusts. Neither they nor their camels could be counted, and so they wasted the land as they came in. And that's how Israel was greatly impoverished because of Midian. So far, so good? Okay, now, everybody look here. Don't look at your paper. Look at me. Right? Okay? The Israelites cried out to the Lord for help. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord on account of the Midianites, the Lord sent what?
A prophet.
No, that's not what we're expecting. What we're expecting is God sends a deliverer, right? This is what we've seen so far. They sin, God sells them the hand of an oppressor, right? They cry out because of the oppressor, God sends them a deliverer who takes care of the situation. So far, so good? Again, it's a three little pigs scenario. We're setting things up, and now we've broken the pattern because now you can take a look at the picture or at the paper. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord on account of the Midianites, the Lord sent a prophet to the Israelites. And he said to them, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, I led you up from Egypt. I brought you out of the house of slavery. I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of everyone who oppressed you. I drove them out before you, and I gave you their land, and I said to you, I am the Lord your God. You should not pay reverence to the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you live. But you have not given heed to my voice." I'm expecting deliverance. And what I get is a little sermon. And not a very happy sermon. Not a reassuring sermon. A little sermon that I'm not quite sure what's going to happen now. I'm not quite sure if there's even going to be any deliverance. You see how that works? So now I'm not sure. Again, the pattern got broken. So now I'm not sure if there's going to be any deliverance. There is. Spoiler alert. There will be. Eventually. Okay. So here we go. The call of Gideon. Or not. Now the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak at Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, as his son Gideon was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites, right? Because they come in and they destroy everything. So if you get just a little bit of grain or something, you have to take care of it yourself pretty quickly, or else the Midianites are going to come in. Right? We just read that with the oppression part, right? He was beating out wheat in the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. And the angel Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, you mighty warrior." And Gideon answered him, "All right, let's go whip up the Midianites." No. "But sir, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us?" Uh, Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, I led you up from Egypt, blah, 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 but you haven't given heed to my voice. Maybe that's the reason why? You start to see himself isn't even aware of the pattern, right? About, he just thinks it's sort of just, there's no rhyme or reason why the Midianites are there. Why has all this happened to us? Where are all his wonderful deeds that our ancestors recounted to us, saying, didn't the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has cast us off, and he's given us in the hand of Midian. I don't know why this has happened. The Lord turned to him and said, no, no, no. Go in this might of yours and deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. I hereby commission you. And he responded, all right, let's go and defeat Midian. No. But sir, how can I deliver Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least of my family. And the Lord said, but I will be with you, and you're going to stretch out the Midianites, every one of them. And he said to him, all right, let's go whip them up. No. You see how... You don't need to... Oh, we can just stop right now. You see, Gideon, right? Right? You see what kind of person he is. He doesn't want to do anything. And the reason, I'll tell you why, he doesn't want to do anything is not because he's lazy. He's obviously not lazy. He's beating out wheat and the wine press and all this. He's not lazy, it's because he's afraid. Which might not be the most important quality in the deliverer, right? No, I'm going to be with you. You're going to strike down the Midianites, every one of them. And he said, well, if I found favor with you, then show me a sign that it's you're the one who's speaking with me. Don't depart from here until I come to you and bring my present, and I set it before you. And he said, okay, I'll stay here until you return. We got a job to do. But go ahead. So Gideon goes to his house. He prepares a kid. He barbecues a goat. Makes unleavened cakes from an ephah of flour. He put the meat in a basket. He put broth in a pot. He brought them under the oak tree. He presented. Just notice how right here, the story just sort of slows down. Because tick tock, tick tock. We still got people coming in like locusts and destroying everything. But no, 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 no. Gideon needs a sign. And so he did it. And the angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened cakes and put them on this rock and pour out the broth. And that's what he did. And then the angel of the Lord reached out the tip of his staff that was in his hand, and he touched the meat with the 11 cakes, and whoosh! Fire sprang up from the rock and consumed the meat and the 11 cakes, and the angel of the Lord vanished from his sight. And Gideon perceived that it was the angel of the Lord, and Gideon said, all right, I'm ready to go defeat some Midianites. No. You can see why it's the call of Gideon. Or not, right? And then he said, help me, Lord God. I've seen the angel of the Lord face to face. And the Lord said to him, ah, peace be to you, right? Don't be afraid. You're not going to die. And then Gideon went out and defeated the... No. He built an altar to the Lord, and he called it the Lord is peace. Just notice he builds this altar, and it's like, oh, the first church of peace. Which is not exactly what you would want a military leader to be concerned about, right? No, 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 I don't want to cause any problems, right? The Lord is peace. And to this day, it still stands in Ophir, which belongs to the every Ezraites, which is might not necessarily be a positive thing. But anyway, okay, so, we're going to try this again. Here we go. God's going to call Gideon, as you can see, to take a stand. Or not, right? Because again, all this sinning, right? The Israelites again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. It has to do with their worshiping foreign gods, Baal. Consistently, that's what it's been so far. So, that night, the Lord said to him, take your father's bull, the second bull, 7 years old, and you go over there to wherever you are in Abiez land, and pull down the altar of Baal that belongs to your father, and cut down the sacred pole that is beside it. And you build an altar to the Lord, your God, on top of that stronghold there in proper order, and then you take that second bull and you offer it as a burnt offering on the wood of the sacred pole that you cut down. All right. Right, we're gonna like make a stand. Right, the whole problem has been all this Baal worship. We're gonna turn people back to God. And so Gideon took 10 of his servants, and he did as the Lord told him. But because he was too afraid of his family and the townspeople to do it by day, he did it by night. And so, when the people rose early in the morning, the altar all was torn down, and the sacred pole beside it was cut down, and the sacred bull was offered on the altar that had been built. And so they said to him, what's up with this? Who is this? Who did that? And Gideon stood up and said, I did! And you need to turn your hearts back. No, he doesn't. So Gideon, who's done this? And after searching and inquiring, finally they were told Gideon the son of Joash did it. And then the people said to Joash, bring out your son so that he can die, because he's pulled down the altar of Baal and cut down the sacred pole beside it. And Gideon said, no, I'm not going to die because God has called. No, Gideon doesn't. Again, you can see how this is working, right? It's exactly... Othniel. Wherefore art thou, Othniel, right? Oh my gosh, things used to be so good. People who actually did what they were supposed to do. So Joash, that is his daddy, right, comes out and says, are you going to contend for Baal? Are you going to defend his cause? Whoever contends for him is going to be put to death by stoning. If he's a god, let him contend for himself because his altar's been torn down. And therefore, on that day, Gideon was called Jerubbaal. That is, let Baal wrestle or contend. So Gideon gets his name changed, and it's interesting enough, right? His name is changed. People start calling Gideon by a different name. And the different name they start calling him has Baal in it. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. There's Midianites everywhere like locusts, and he just makes me mad. All right, here we go. Time for deliverance. Or not. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the people of the east came together, and crossing the Jordan, they encamped in the valley of Jezreel, which is right in the middle. If you've ever been to Israel, it's right in the middle of Israel, right? But the Spirit of the Lord took possession of Gideon. All right, here we go. Ready? Spirit of the Lord took possession of Gideon, and he sounded the trumpet, and the Ebrezerites were called out to follow him. And then he also sent messengers throughout all Manasseh, and they were called out to follow him. And then he also sent messengers to Asher, and Zebulun, and Naphtali, and they went out to meet him. And then Gideon said to God, in order to see whether you'll deliver Israel by my hand, as you said, I'm going to lay a fleece of wool right on the threshing floor. And if there's any dew on the fleece alone, and it's dry all around, then I'll know that you're right, then you will deliver Israel by my hand, as you said. And so we have to wait all day and all night and in the morning. All right, it's true. The fleece was dry, right? It was dry on the fleece, and it was wet all around, which is kind of a trick, right? Because normally you would expect with dewfall, the fleece would be wet, and the ground would be dry, necessarily, right? I mean, the fleece is going to capture it, right? So this is actually, it's a great sign. Awesome. So then, Gideon said to God, don't let your anger burn against me. Let me, just one more time. Let me please make a trial with the fleece just one more. Let it be dry on the fleece, and then all around let there be dew. So we wait all day and all night. And finally in the morning, it was true as well, right? It was dry on the fleece, and then it was wet on the whatever. And then Jerubbaal, you know, that's Gideon, his new name, right? And all the troops that were with him rose early and encamped beside the spring of Herod, and the camp of Midian was north of them, below the hill of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said to Gideon, you know what? You called all those people. Why are you calling all the other people? We were ready. I told you that very night. We were ready to do it, and you called. You know, we can't do it now. Because this is going to be the way in which it's going to work. Remember Ehud? He doesn't like bring like 10,000 people into the chamber of King Eglon. He goes in himself. Right? It's a stealth measure, right? Now we've got all these people around. We need to get all these people. So what he does is that he looks at how many people does he have? He has 22,000. Oh, I'm sorry, he does it now. He has 32,000. And he just says to everybody there, he says, if you're afraid, you can go home. 22,000, go home. It seems as though it's catching.
right?
He's a great leader, very inspiring. 10,000 are left, and God says, no, we can't really do like this sort of infiltration, like stealth measure with 10,000 people either. This is what you do. You go down to the river, and you tell everybody to drink. And if they do this, and again, those of you in the back who might not stand up, right, if they do this, right, and they get down by the river, right, and they do this, right, because because obviously, right, if you're doing this, that means that you're ready to fight. So far, so good, right, because then you can, like, oh, somebody's coming, zoom, so far, so good. There are others, 300 of them, who are stupid, who do this. So far, so please pledge. they get down on their bellies and just like drink like a dog does. 300 of them. And God says, all those who are like actual warriors, send them home. 300 of them that are actually stupid, that actually lie on the ground, those are the ones we'll use. It's going to be a trick, right? Which whenever we see, we're ready for the attack and the attack, that's actually at the end. When we actually see the attack, in fact, the attack is not going to be overwhelming the enemy. Just like we've seen before, it's going to be a stealth measure, right? Which would make sense. You don't want, again, anybody remember, oh my goodness, how long ago was this? 7, 8 years that when United States, whatever, secret forces went in and killed Osama bin Laden. Remember this? You remember that? Yeah, I mean, that night, how many people were there? That's right, about 10,000, 20,000 people stormed the palace. No, it was just like maybe 8, right? So again, it's this type of thing. This is the way in which we're going to win the battle. Gideon, however, being afraid, he wants lots of people there. We don't need lots of people. In fact, lots of people actually undermine the whole thing. We only need 300. And so, we're ready. Ready for the attack. The camp of Midian was below them in the valley. And that same night, the Lord said to them, get up, attack the camp, because I've given it into your hand. But if you're afraid, go down to the camp with your servant Purah, and then hear what they say, and then afterwards your hands are going to strengthen to attack the camp. It's kind of interesting. If you go all the way back, like 2 pages, it's like God tells him, I am with you. You're a mighty warrior. There's a sign that's given him with the angel, right? It's like, but if you're afraid, go down there and hear what the Midianites are talking about, and maybe that will convince you. Notice we haven't, how far are we in? I mean, my gosh, we're already 3 pages in, and still no deliverance. So anyway, he goes down with his servant, Purah, and the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the people of the east were lying around the valley as thick as locusts, just like we heard before. Their camels were without number, countless as the sand on the seashore. And when Gideon arrived, there was a man telling a dream to his comrade. And he said, oh, I had a dream. And in it, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the camp of Midian and came to the tent so it struck it and so that it fell down. And then it turned upside down and then the tent collapsed. And then his friend answered, my God, what did you eat last night? There's absolutely nothing in. I mean, it's a weird dream. I guarantee you, if I started this class off, and I had said to you, before we get started, I had this dream last night, and there was like this loaf of barley bread that like came tumbling into Transfiguration, and it like knocked it down, and the barley bread like turned over upside down, and the whole place collapsed. There is a mighty warrior that shall come against Transfiguration. And no, it's a silly dream, but the way in which it gets interpreted by this guy, He happens to say, well, that's the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. Into his hand God has given Midian and all the army. How do you get that from the dream? I don't... But Gideon hears this and it's like, oh, maybe I should defeat the Midianites. The attack. So Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation. He worshipped. And then he returned to the camp of Israel and he said, get up, because the Lord has given the army of Midian into your hand. All right, here we go. Now we're going somewhere. After he divided the 300 men into three companies, I would guess 100, 100, 100, 100, he put trumpets in the hands of all the men, empty jars with torches inside the jars. And so there's like candles or something maybe inside the clay jars. And he said, look at me and you do the same thing. When I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I blow the trumpet, I and all who are with me, then you blow your trumpets all around the whole camp and shout, for the Lord and for Gideon! Right. And so Gideon and the 100 who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch. I assume that that's probably somewhere around midnight. And then when they had just set the watch, and then they blew the trumpets and they smashed the jars that were in their hands, right? So it makes all this loud noise and just, you know, crash, 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 and then there's suddenly light everywhere, right? And so the three companies blew their trumpets and they broke the jars, holding in their left hand all the torches, and in their right hands the trumpets to blow, and they cried, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon! And every man stood in his place. They didn't do anything. That's all they did. They just stood there, right? And all the men in the camp, they ran, right? They cried out and they fled. When they blew those 300 trumpets, as the Lord had set every man, then the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, against all the army, right? So they get panicked and they start killing each other because it's dark and they don't know and they hear all this noise. And all the army fled as far as Beth Shittah, towards Zerera, as far as the border of Abel Meholah by Taba. Nobody knows where these places are. But obviously they're running away someplace, right? And the men of Israel were called out from Naphtali, and from Asher, and from Manasseh, all these places that he had called out before. Now might be the time to call out the army and get things done. And they pursued after the Midianites. Awesome! Woo! Deliverance! Or not! Gideon sent messengers throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, come down against the Midianites and seize the waters against them as far as Beth Ara, and also the Jordan. And all the men of Ephraim were called out, and they seized the waters as far as Beth Ara, and also the Jordan. And they captured the two captains of Midian. Remember Sisera in the last story, right? Now we have two of them, and they actually capture them. Oreb and Zeb. I guarantee you, somewhere in Arkansas, somewhere in the past century, there has been twins, and their names have been Oreb and Zeb, I guarantee you. But anyway, I will put money on that. But anyway, Oreb and Zeb, and they killed Oreb on the rock of Oreb, and they killed Zeb, the winepress of Zeb, and they pursued the Midianites, and they brought out the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon beyond the Jordan. Yay! So now we got the captains, right? The captains of the army. Yay! Deliverance. Well, not quite, because we still have some kings to deal with, but that's not important. And then Ephraimite said to him, what did you do to us? Why didn't you call us when you went out to fight against the Midianites? And they upbraided him violently, and so he said to them, actually, if you just look back at the previous paragraph, I did call you out. Why are you so upset? Why are you so mad? Who's in charge here? No, he doesn't say that. He says, what have I done in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim, right? Just the your least type of activity. Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer, which is me, right? My tribe, right? What you've done, the least bit that you've done is better than everything I've done, which is actually probably true, right? Because he hasn't really done much at all. But anyway, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to make things nice and everything for them. And they said, okay, yeah, so, okay, that's fine. And then Gideon came to the Jordan, and he crossed over, he and his 300, who were with him, and they were exhausted, and they were famished, and they said to the people of Sukkot, and it's important to know that Sukkot is an Israelite city. He's talking to Israelites here. he comes to Sukkot, and he says, please give some loaves of bread to my followers, because they're exhausted. I'm pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian. And the officials of Sukkot said, well, do you already have in your possession the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna that we should give bread to your army? Have you done a darn thing? Well, no, actually I don't have it, but when the Lord has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hand, I'm going to trample your flesh on the thorns of the wilderness and on briars. That sounds weird, just to state the obvious, but it doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound conciliatory, it doesn't sound nice, it sounds rather vengeful, and not vengeful in a just way, but vengeful in a personal way. And not only that, but he went up there to Penuel, and he made the same request to them. And the people of Penuel answered him as the people of Sukkot had answered. And he said to the people of Penuel, which is again, Israelite people, when I come back victorious, I'm going to break down your tower. And then he captures Zeba and Zalmunna in the next little thing. And again, it's a perfectly good story. He actually captures them. He throws all the army into a panic. And then when Gideon, the son of Joash, returned for the battle by the ascent of Harris, he caught a young man, one of the people of Sukkot, an Israelite. And he questioned him. And he listed for him the officials and the elders of Sukkot, 77 people. And then he came to the people of Sukkot and he said, there's Zeba, there's Zalmunna, about whom you taunted me, saying, do you already have in your possession the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna, that we should give bread to your troops who are exhausted? And so he took the elders of the city, and he took thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he trampled the people of Sukkot. Again, I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good. And then he also goes to the Tower of Penuel, and he kills everybody in the city, all the men of the city. Again, this is an Israelite city, because they insulted him. This is great leadership. I've encouraged Casey to sort of do similar things here. Anyway, he said to Zeba and Zalmunna, what about the men whom you killed at Tabor, which we don't have a story of, but I guess they killed some Israelite people, which is kind of ironic, because he's just done the same thing. What about those people that you killed? And they answered, you know what? Just like you are, that's what they were. Every one of them, they resembled sons of a king. Right? So they were special people. And he said, you know what? They were my brothers, the sons of my mother. And as the Lord lives, if you had saved them, I wouldn't kill you. And so he said to Jether, his firstborn, go and kill them.
You do it.
Yeah, you do it. Right? But the boy didn't want to, because he was a boy. I sort of picture it to be like 4 years old, but I don't know. Probably not 4 years old, but he doesn't. Again, this is great leadership, right? And so Zeba and Zalmunna said, you come on, you kill us. As a man is, so is his strength, which sounds like a little proverb. It's some of the words, do it if you want it done. So Gideon proceeded to kill Zeba and Zalmunna. And just notice, he finally kills the kings of Midian, because they tell him to do it. My God, why didn't we do this 3 pages ago? Why didn't we? Hail to you, mighty warrior. Long time ago. Fear, 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 fear. And so Gideon proceeded to kill Zeba and Zalmunna, and he took the crescents that were on the necks of their camels. I assume that with camels, there's sort of a breastplate type of thing. And for them, because they're kings, they're made out of gold. We learn that in the next paragraph, that there's sort of these, again, so they're big and heavy things, right? So he takes them. And then the Israelites said to Gideon, you rule over us, you and your grandson also, because you've delivered us out of the hand of Midian. You'll just notice the way in which religious leadership or political leadership has worked so far. With Othniel. Who's Othniel's son? Yeah, exactly. It was a trick question. Nobody knows. Because it's not important. Because the leadership is just with Othniel. And then Othniel dies. Israel sins. They cry out in oppression. God raises up Echad. Who's that? Echad's son? It's not important. Because that's not the way in which the political leadership is going here. It's like the difference between a monarchy and a presidency. So far, so good. You see how it's working, right? That is, we just because your father is president doesn't mean that you're... Never mind. Joking. But not necessarily, right? So far, so good. After that, we get Deborah, or maybe Barak. Probably not Jael, because she's not even Israelite. We get these stories. Who's Deborah's son or Barak's? We don't have any idea. Now we have Gideon. And at the end of the story, they say, you know what? We want you to rule over us. And then after you die, we want your son to rule over us. And then after he dies, we want your grandson to rule over us. This is called a monarchy. What they want to do is have a monarchy. So far, so good. We want some stability. And you're such a good, quality, strong, brave person that we want you to start a dynasty. You rule over us, you and your son and your grandson also, because you've delivered us out of the hand of Midian. After about six pages, but that's not important right now. Gideon said to them, I'm not going to rule over you, and my son's not going to rule over you. The Lord will rule over you. Awesome! He refuses the power. So far, so good? Awesome! And then, like so many people, he keeps talking. Right? He says something great and then blah, blah, blah. Right? And then Gideon said to them, I'm not going to rule over you. My son's not going to rule over you. The Lord rule over you. And then he said to them, let me just ask you something. Each of you give me an earring. Right? He's taken as plunder. The enemy had golden earrings because they were Ishmaelites. And they said, oh, we'll willingly give them. And so they spread a garment. Each threw into it an earring that he had taken as booty. And the weight of the golden earrings that he requested was 1,700 shekels of gold. I don't know how much a shekel is, but that sounds like a lot of earrings. That sounds like a lot of gold. And there's also those crescents and the pendants from the purple garments worn by the kings of Midian and the collars that were on the necks of their camels. So he's got a lot of gold now. And what he does with that gold is that he makes a longer table. No, he doesn't make a longer table. He certainly does not distribute it. He does not pay off his warriors. What he does with it is that he makes an ephod out of it. You know what an ephod is? Nobody does. Nobody knows what this thing is. It's a weird word. I don't know what it is. It's not an idol. It's not a golden idol. It's certainly not a golden calf. But whatever an ephod is, he makes it out of gold, and he puts it in his town in Ophrah. And all Israel prostituted themselves to it there, and it became a snare to Gideon and to his family. Whatever it is the word prostituted here means they worship, right? Spiritually worship it. Remember the pattern. They sin. God sells them in the hand of an oppressor. They cry out. God hears their cry. And God raises up a deliverer who delivers them from the hand of the oppressor. And there's peace for as long as the judge lives. Once the judge dies, they sin again. You notice what's happened here. At the end of this beautiful Gideon story, it's Gideon himself that leads them to prostitute themselves. It's Gideon himself who leads them to sin. That break is now broken. That didn't make any sense. That break is now transgressed. Now we start sinning even before the judge dies, and in fact, not just before the judge dies, but in fact, it's the judge himself that's actually leading the charge. And then the pattern comes in. So Midian was subdued before the Israelites, and they lifted up their heads no more. Yay! And so the land had rest for 40 years in the days of Gideon. Yay! And Jerubbaal, just notice his name actually has changed here, Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went to live in his own house. And Gideon had 70 sons, his own offspring. He had many wives. He has a concubine who was in Shechem, who also bore him a son. And he named him Abimelech. You see the word Abimelech? You see that name? You know what that means in Hebrew? The name Abimelech in Hebrew means, my father is a king. Oh no, I'm not going to be a king over you, and my son's not going to be a king over you. I'll just name my son, my father's a king. Seems as though he might actually have some motivation. He might actually have some gumption. He may actually want to do something with his life. And what that is to rule over people. Gideon, the son of Joash, died of a good old age and was buried in the tomb of his father, Joash of Ophrah, the Abiezrites. And as soon as Gideon died, the Israelites relapsed. And notice the phrasing here. They relapsed and they prostituted themselves with the Baals, making Baal Berith their god. The same exact phrase that was what he himself had led them to do. The Israelites didn't remember the Lord their God, who'd rescued them from the hand of all their enemies on every side. And they didn't exhibit loyalty to the house of Jerubbaal, that's Gideon, in return for all the good that he had done to Israel, frowny face. The frowny face is not in the original text. That's me. All the good that he had done for Israel. Okay. He does the 300 and they break the thing and they kill each other and then he pursues. He doesn't actually kill the captains, but he does actually kill the kings. After six pages. All the good that he had done to Israel. We could have done this, we could have solved this a long time ago. You can see, Othniel, Anthony, Deborah Barak, Gideon. We've got two more major prophets that we're going to deal with in the book. Jephthah and Samson. You know Samson. Right? Jephthah and Samson. And I can tell you this trajectory that we're on, I'm afraid it's going to keep going. And those final two judges are going to make Gideon look like a hero. So, whew, thanks so much. Appreciate it. Next time, Jephthah.